This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast is brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, who provide you with premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation time and dollar. Give them a try. Go visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. And brought to you by All Star Vacation Homes, who offers you the highest quality in both vacation homes or condos. Hospitality has a new home, and its name is All Star Vacations. So visit them at allstarvacationhomes.com.
Hi, this is Mitch Brannon from Lillington, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 162 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is Michelle Scribner-McLean.
McLean. Who's on the show?
McLean.
It's actually McLean, but okay.
McLean. Happy Thursday, McLean.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much. How are you today?
I am doing okay.
All right. So you're going to have to bear with me for this shout-out because it's a little complicated, but let's all listen in and follow along. This is for Justin LeBlanc, and Justin lives in Portland, Maine, and he is affiliated with the Portland Sea Dogs. He's a fan, and I guess he's worked with the Portland Sea Dogs. He is going to start off on May 4th at Fenway Park with the mascot for the Portland Sea Dogs. He's going to accompany him some of the way. He's going to walk 114 miles from Fenway Park to Hadlock Fields to raise money for Tourette syndrome. So that's pretty impressive. And Justin, we wish you well, and we can't wait to see the pictures, and we'd like to give you a big shout out for that. He's going to be done. He thinks it's going to take 4 days to do that.
And maybe we can have him on the show.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, cool.
And have him on the show. We are still besieged by questions on nutrition, and so the gracious Tara Guidus has come back to help us answer these questions, and I want to make sure that everybody knows who Tara is. She is the nutritionist, official nutritionist for Run Disney, and she's also the official She's also the team dietitian for the NBA Orlando Magic, and she's got several books on nutrition, and she's just a wonderful person to have on, and boy, whenever we have any questions on nutrition, she's right there, and she's always willing to come forward and help our listeners. Tara, thank you very much for coming back.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Tara, because you're going to be running Boston, I just want to get you up on the lingo when you get to Boston. I would say you're wicked smart and wicked awesome.
All right. Yeah, I know. Wicked. Wicked is the word, right? And, you know, the Boston area is the only people I've ever heard that use that word.
Yeah. It's unique.
So funny.
It's
yeah,
unique.
I love
In fact,
it.
I ran my 10K today, and I had a little sorbet at the end. They were giving out samples, and they said, "Do you want Jimmy's on that?" And I think that's a regional thing too. So I had the little chocolate sprinkles, if you don't know what Jimmy's are, but we call them Jimmy's here in the Northeast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Ready for more questions?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So this is a marathon of questions. The first question is from Suzanne Verratti, and she says, I don't know if I'm making sense, which is a good way to start a question, but my question is related to what percentage of your diet should come from each of the three groups, fat, carbs, and protein. My Fitness Pal, the app My Fitness Pal, defaults to the settings of 50% carbs, 30% fat, and 20% protein, but that doesn't seem right for a runner or for strength training. What a great question. Makes sense to me, Suzanne.
Yeah, that is a great question. And I would say that those defaults are fine for a runner or someone who's doing strength, because it really, you know, 20% protein should be, you know, of course, it all depends on your calories. So you can calculate protein, for example, based on percentage of calories, or you can calculate it per pound body weight. So, for example, strength training, you know, I would say you should be getting about, you know, 0.6 to 0.7 grams per pound body weight. So if you're, you know, let's see, I'll do the math real quick here. If you're 150 pounds, that's about 105 grams of protein, or let's see, 0.6 would be 90. So anywhere, you know, around 100 grams of protein. Depending on how many calories you eat, that could or could not be much different. you know, if you're eating 1500 calories versus 2500 calories, then you take, you know, 20% and divide it by four. And, you know, that's going to be how many grams it is. So based on a 2000 calorie diet, then that would be 100 grams of protein. So there you go. So it gives you about the same either way, whether you go, you know, on the 0.7. But again, I don't know how much you weigh, if you weigh 150 pounds, if you're eating 2000 calories. So it really depends. But I would say that about 50% of carbohydrates is good, because carbohydrates are our body's preferred source of energy. You don't want to go much lower than that, especially as a runner. And I would say, if anything, you could even go, you know, 55% and bring the fat percentage down a little bit. So anywhere between 20 to 30% fat, I think, is fine for me. So if anything, I would go a little bit lower fat, and you could take what you don't eat in fat and put it into either one of the buckets, whether it's carbs or protein. But I think, you know, that's a long way of saying, I think the default for MyFitnessPal is fine. 50% carbs, 20% protein, 30% fat. Or if you want, I would go a little bit lower fat and put it into the carbs and or the protein.
Very cool.
Sounds like a plan.
it gets hard when you talk numbers like that. I start losing people.
Yeah,
but that's why it's hard with the percentages too, because it's so abstract, you know?
It's funny. I think you and Carissa must have little holsters, because every time I've talked to her, she also has a calculator, like right there, like faster than I can open up the app on my phone. So you both have one in every room and in your car ready to calculate.
Especially when I'm, you know, talking like this. It's like, I never know what questions you guys are going to ask me, so I want to be able to calculate something if I need to.
That's funny.
The next question comes from Sandy Hall. This is a short one, but it may have a long answer. She says, are supplements necessary if one generally eats a healthy diet?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yes, actually. I do believe in supplements, and certain supplements I think are necessary because you can't get them in your diet, even if you are eating a healthy, super healthy diet. So two supplements I think everyone should take supplementally, two nutrients that you should take as supplements because they're hard to get in the diet, are vitamin D. So D as in dog. And even if you are, you know, going out in the sun a little bit, you know, whatever. I just want everybody to be taking supplemental vitamin D, at least 1,000 IU a day, up to 5,000 IU a day, depending on what your blood level is. So if you can, you know, get a blood level in your doctor, or there's actually websites that you can order a test for $40 or so and do a finger stick and, you know, put the blood onto this little card they send you, send it in, and they'll email you your results. And it's worth it just to get a baseline, you know, to know what your vitamin D is. And if you're deficient, then you should be taking, you know, 2,000 to 5,000 IU a day. And anything less than 40 is not ideal. I want you to be above 40. If you're less than 20, then you definitely should be taking 5,000 IU a day.
And I just want to jump in to say, I just had a physical, and my primary care doctor said the exact same thing.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everyone should be taking 1,000, and your multivitamin doesn't usually have that much. So whatever's in your multi, that's like a bonus. Don't even count that. Take 1,000 in addition to whatever's in your multi. And the reason is, you know, vitamin D is related to reducing risk. It's not cause effect, but it's reducing risk of lots of different things, including the big three: diabetes, certain cancers, and heart disease. And also seasonal affective disorder, depression. It's been linked to a lot of stuff. The other one that I want everyone to take supplementally is omega-3. And we've heard lots and lots of research on omega-3s. And specifically for runners, I think it's good because it reduces inflammation. So it's good for your brain. It's good for your heart. But it's also good to reduce inflammation. And we as runners are inflamed a lot. So again, 1,000. 1,000 is a good number. So that's measured in milligrams. So 1,000 milligrams. But here's where it gets a little cloudy. I want you to get it from EPA and DHA. And specifically, that's going to be what's in fish. And if you're a vegan, then you can get it from algae. And you have to, it's a little bit more expensive, and you have to specifically look for a vegan source of DHA and EPA. And there are some out there. You might need to order it online. They're kind of hard to find, but you can. So the DHA and the EPA are the ones that have been shown to be the most beneficial for your heart and your brain. And so that's the one I want, the DHA plus the EPA to equal 1,000. And it may take 2 or 3 pills, depending on the brand that you're getting, to get that much. So the flax, the hemp, the chia, you know, all that stuff is going to be ALA, which is also good. It's a good source of omega-3, but it's kind of the vegetarian source, or the nut and seed source of omega-3, which hasn't been as connected to heart and brain beneficial, you know, things. So it's good to do all that stuff, but I also want you to get the fish sources of it. So those are my two that I want you to take supplementally. Now, the question was probably directed at like a multivitamin, I'm guessing. A multivitamin, if you are eating a healthy diet, is probably not necessary, but why not? You know, I mean, I'm a dietitian and I take a multivitamin just because, you know, not every day is perfect. And as a runner, your needs are higher. You know, your needs of everything go up a little bit as you become more active. So why not take a multivitamin? And then the fourth one that I do recommend as a supplement occasionally is calcium. And that's not just for women, because men have bones too, but it's for everyone, man or woman, who doesn't drink or eat dairy. So if you're not getting 2 sources of dairy, so one, you know, yogurt, milk, cheese, 2 sources, 2 servings every day, then you should take supplemental calcium. I don't want everyone to take supplemental calcium, because that calcium can lead to kidney stones supplementally if you're taking too much. So I don't want everyone to just, you know, randomly take it. I do want it to only be for people who aren't getting their sources of dairy and or calcium fortified foods, like calcium fortified orange juice or calcium fortified, you know, soy milk or something like that.
Tara, I have a question on the calcium. A few years ago, I read an article that said that if you are taking supplemental calcium, what you should do is you should take it separately from any other supplements. For instance, you should take all the other supplements, let's say, in the morning, and then take your calcium supplement at night, because the feeling was that it absorbs some of the nutrients from the others and cancels them out. Is that true?
Well, yes, it competes. It competes specifically with iron. So it's better, and zinc, some of the metals. So it's best to just take it at a separate time. Now, if you keep forgetting to take it at a separate time, then just take it all at the same time. You know, some is better than none. But if you can remember to take it at a separate time, then yes, do that.
Okie doke.
So Michelle? Interesting. Okay, the next question is by Joseph Gruff Hall, and he says, my thin running friends eat like there's no tomorrow, but they also run 10 to 12 miles per day. I'm a fairly new runner with a goal of losing about 60 pounds. What should I eat if I'm running to lose weight? I want to eat enough carbs and calories to fuel my long runs, but I don't want to eat too much of those things either. Also, good carbs versus bad carbs. They say pasta is and white bread is bad, but I see my running friends eat it, and they have it at races. Pasta in the park party that Disney has. Help.
Yeah.
So I want to jump in and say, first, get Tara's book, because it's so good and has so many great recipes. And actually, one of the things I like about it is it talks about the science behind all of this. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that book that you're talking about is called Flat Belly Cookbook for Dummies. So yes, I would highly recommend that, just because it gives you the science of weight loss, specifically weight loss around the abdominal area, which is more where a lot of people accumulate it, especially men tend to accumulate it around the abdominal area. And so there are specific things that you can do. So absolutely get Flat Belly Cookbook for Dummies, and there's 100 recipes in there, and there are sample meal plans, yada, yada. So that's a really good, thank you for that, Michelle. We'll plug.
No, if I didn't really like it, I wouldn't say it. It really is a good book.
Thank you. So I don't know the best way to help you, because I don't know what your start weight is now, yada, yada. So let me just give some general ideas here, and hopefully this will help you. And, you know, you can definitely reach out to me. I mean, I have myself and two dietitians that work for me. So we do individual consultations. We can do them by phone, so you don't have to live in Orlando. So, you know, if you need more specific information than this, then please reach out to me and we can help. But for everybody out there who's trying to lose weight and who's trying to train at the same time, and, you know, definitely if you've got friends who are running 10 to 12 miles a day, then, you know, just ignore them. And they're thin, you know, thin friends. You're going to be eating different things than them. You can't eat everything, you know, when you're not running as much as that. And I don't recommend running 10 to 12 miles every day. So, you know, yes, you can eat white stuff. You can eat white bread, white pasta, white rice. It's not my favorite. And so occasionally, yeah, you're going to have some white pasta, and that's okay. But primarily, I would love you to choose whole grains as much as possible, and the brown rice and the whole grain pasta and, you know, quinoa and barley and whole wheat bread and all that kind of stuff. What I would do, not knowing, you know, how much you weigh and how tall you are and all that kind of stuff, I would get one of these apps, whether it's MyFitnessPal or Food Diary or whatever. You know, there's tons of different apps that you can download. And I would keep track for a week of every single morsel of food that goes into your mouth. And then you have a baseline. So you know, how many calories am I eating right now? Is that too little? Is it just right? Is it not enough? And you'll know that based on what's happening with your weight. So if you're not losing weight, then whatever you're doing right now is either too much or it's just right. So now we need to decrease. And it's not that we're going to cut out one whole meal. The key, the real trick in losing weight is taking the calories really from all different places throughout the day, not just all one place. Because I'm a big believer in spread your calories out throughout the day. And most people, I get them eating way more in the morning and, you know, snacks in the morning and stuff than they're used to eating because of needing more, you know, definitely at those times. So try to get a good baseline of what am I eating right now? Am I eating 3,000 calories right now? Am I eating 2,500 calories right now? Or maybe because you've been conscious, you have been losing weight. So right now you are losing at the number that you're doing. So keep doing what you're doing. And if you find, you know, your question too was, what if I go too low, or how do I know if I'm going too low? Well, if you're fatigued, if you're losing more than 2 pounds a week, then you're probably too low. And I want you to then go up a little bit more. I'd rather you lose the weight more slowly and have it come off and stay off and not lose muscle than lose the weight really super fast. So if you're losing on average, you know, some weeks you might lose 3 and then you don't lose any the next week. And so it's averaging out to 1.5 pounds a week or whatever. If you're losing on average more than 2 pounds a week, then you're going too low and you're probably going to get injured and you're going to get fatigued and you're probably really cranky and no one wants to be around you. So, so hopefully that helps. But, you know, the biggest, if I have one piece of advice for people who are trying to lose weight, number one thing is portion control. It's not, oh, I'm eating white rice versus brown rice. It's portion control. I don't care how healthy it is. If you're eating too much of it, it's going to cause weight gain. So, you know, that take that and go, okay, you know, what I eat should last me between 2 and 4 hours. If it's lasting me more than 4 hours, you ate too much. So you should be hungry 2 to 3 hours after a meal.
My brother says the biggest tip with weight loss is to pay attention about what goes in your pie hole.
Well, and you've heard the saying, yeah. You know, the hardest thing to do with weight loss is pushing the hardest exercise you'll do is pushing the plate away. And that's so true. You know, it's that portion control and the discipline that it takes to, you know, say, and, you know, one of my big tips is get a smaller plate. The average plate size has increased 36% since the 60s and 70s. So if you can eat from the salad plate in your cabinet versus the dinner plate, you know, our dinner plates are too big. They just are too big.
And so, order appetizers when you go out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Don't touch the bread basket. I mean, I could go on and on. But, you know, I would say for him, you know, you need a baseline to know how many calories am I eating right now and what is that doing to me? Am I maintaining at that? Am I losing at that? Am I losing too fast? Am I gaining? You know, and then you can adjust from there. So on average, if you take off 500 calories per day, you'll lose 1 pound a week.
And we want to remind Joseph, like you had said, Tara, that there are calculators out there on the internet that allow you to plug in your height, your weight, your age, what kind of if you're sedentary, if you're active, and it will tell you the amount of calories that on average, I guess, of what you need to take in every day to maintain your weight. And then, as you said, it's 500 calories less per day to lose 1 pound per week. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's go to Donna Phillips Quackenbush, who has an interesting question. I'm going to add a little bit to this question. She says she wants to know your take on diet soda, and I'm going to add something like Powerade Zero. She says, I'm an addict that feels no different if I don't drink it, so it's hard to stop because I don't see or feel any huge benefits to cutting it out. Okay, so tell us about how you feel about diet soda and Powerade Zero.
So those are two different things to me. So Powerade Zero, I have no problem with if you're sitting at your desk, if you're hanging out and you're just wanting something with flavor to drink that has some electrolytes and whatever, great. But if you are running, specifically if you are going to be running more than 1 hour, you need sugar. And so I'm not a fan of the Powerade Zero and the G2 and the reduced carbohydrate sports drinks. I want you to have full strength sports drinks when you are doing long bouts of exercise. I can't emphasize that enough because you need the sugar. That is not the time to try to diet is on a 20-mile run. You need sugar, okay? Otherwise, you're going to crash and burn. So that, you know, that's my take on the Powerade Zero. So I don't know if her question is getting at the non-nutritive sweeteners, and I would encourage you to listen to the podcast that we did previous to this one as well. What number was that one, Mike? 151 or something?
I think it was 161.
161. So anyway, another podcast that I did recently with these guys, I talked at length about non-nutritive sweeteners, but I'll give you the Cliff Note version. They're fine. They're perfectly safe. I have no problem with them. So if you're drinking like a couple of diet sodas a day, I don't have any problem with that. There is some science that shows that it may increase your propensity to eat sweets. It may cause you to crave sweets because your body thinks it's taking in something sweet, but it's not really. And so then it wants something sweet. So if that's happening to you, if all of a sudden you're craving a lot of sweets because of drinking diet sodas, then maybe you want to look at it and say, you know what, maybe if I cut back on my diet soda, I won't be craving sweets as much. But if that's not happening to you, then I don't have a problem with it. It hydrates you. The sweeteners have been highly studied and have been found to be perfectly safe in moderate amounts. And moderate amounts actually are much higher than you might think. Like 12 sodas a day would be not moderate. So I would say, you know, 2 to 3 sodas a day, you know, either 12 or 20 ounce even. So like 3 cans, 2 20 ounces, you know, whatever around there, I have no problem with. When you start getting to 10 cans a day, yeah, you may want to look at that habit. But, you know, the sodas are primarily water, so they are going to hydrate you.
Yeah, I'd like to just do a follow-up on that. We have a question later on that I think would really go good to tag on to this, Tara. It's sure. From Wade Anderson, and he wanted to know what the best pre- and post-race drinks would be. He uses Accelerade, and he wanted to know what others he should consider.
Yeah, Accelerade is great. You know, so did you say pre and post or during?
Pre and post.
So pre, you know, water's fine, depending on, you know, what time of day you're exercising and if you've had a snack or not, you know. So I used the example earlier that I am a morning runner, and so I will have something to eat before I run. So I just drink water plus my cereal or banana or toast or whatever I'm having before I step out the door. So water's fine. If you're doing, you know, less than an hour, you can just drink water and you're fine. If you're doing more than an hour, that's when the sports drinks are going to be good. But so post, I'm a big fan of chocolate milk. We've talked about that on these,
yes,
on these podcasts.
Me too.
Before.
Me too.
I had one after my my long run today. So chocolate milk is great because it gives you 4 things, which is what you need recovery. So in recovery, you want fluid because you've just, you know, even if you have a little bit of water or your sports drink during your run, you're still not drinking enough during your run that to replace everything you got lost with sweat and breathing. So you need fluid. You need carbs to start replenishing that glycogen that you just used up. You need electrolytes So the sodium and potassium and even calcium are all electrolytes that you lose in sweat. And then also post, you want protein. Now, carbohydrates, you want right away, like within 30 minutes after exercise, you want carbs. Protein, I'm fine if you get it within 2 hours. Because if you do just protein right after, your body's going to break down that protein for energy, and you're not going to have the amino acids left to repair the muscles. So you want to make sure that you're having some carbs, and that's why chocolate milk is so great. Or a smoothie, you know, with fruit and a scoop of protein powder and some fruit juice or milk in there. You know, it doesn't have to be chocolate milk, but anything that's going to have the four components that I just said, and or you can have the protein a little bit later. So, you know, in terms of, he asked specifically about beverages. So water is great, but then also make sure that you're eating some carbs and then, you know, within 2 hours protein. You know, sports drinks are fine to do right after. I'll do that sometimes too. If I don't have anything to eat, like I didn't bring a banana with me and I've driven to wherever I've run to and I'm driving home, I'll drink some more sports drinks so that I get some carbs right away and fluid and electrolytes. And then you can do some of the recovery beverages. So, you know, chocolate milk is sort of a more natural recovery beverage just because it's just sugar added to milk. But you could do some of the, you know, recovery beverages, like the Gatorade Recover or, you know, your Accelerade. There's different, you know, varieties of powders and or recovery beverages that you can do that have protein and carbs and electrolytes in them.
Jarabundi, I'm a fan.
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah.
Okay. Stephanie Grace has our next question, and that's going to be the last of our listener questions. Then I have a question for you. Her question is, I'm a diabetic, and I have no clue how to fuel during a run without the Gatorade and the gummies, gels. Gummy bears are my favorite. All of this has a ton of sugar. What would you suggest be good for a non-sugar alternative that would work?
You're actually have an error in your thinking. Believe it or not, you have to have sugar during your run. And diabetics specifically need to have sugar during their runs because otherwise they can very easily, more than us non-diabetics, fall into hypoglycemia and pass out. Mm-hmm. So you need to have sugar. Yes, I know you're thinking, but I was taught my whole life not to have sugar. I'm a diabetic. But you're also exercising. You're burning a lot of nutrition. It's just like if you would fast all day and not eat and you're moving around, your blood sugar is going to get too low. Well, now you're accelerating how quickly you're burning calories, how quickly you're using glycogen, how quickly, you know, you're using energy. And so you need to replenish that energy. So gummy bears, gummy, you know, all the stuff that is available for during workouts, during runs, is what a diabetic actually should be doing. So whether it's the sports drink, whether it's the gels and blocks and beans and whatever it is, you know, we talked earlier, you can do, you know, some raisins, some dried fruit, you know, if you want to do that for a, quote, more natural something. But you also then need to be careful about getting some sodium from somewhere. You can salt your raisins if you want. But yeah, so that I think you're just have an error in your thinking that, you know, I shouldn't have sugar. Yes, you should. You need sugar as a diabetic while you're running.
And I would assume that you probably would need to, I mean, this is the importance of training runs for everybody, but for people with diabetes, if they're upping their mileage, they need to see how they feel and kind of check their levels and talk to their doctor too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. The last question is mine. It's not Run Disney related. It has to do with Boston. So I've done marathons and half marathons. Most of them, aside from Wine and Dine, have been in the morning. And so I found out that my start time for Boston is 11:35. And I feel really good about fueling for a super early race start. But I'm a little unsure about what I should do to start running at 11:35. So if you could start me maybe really briefly the night before or the afternoon before and then all the way up to just before the race. I know everybody's different, but I was just wondering what your take on that would be.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about Boston is that it is a later start and that we don't have to get up at 3 a.m. but that being said, you know, so the day before really isn't much different. I mean, you want to get a good night's sleep, so I would say earlier dinners are better marathon, you know, for marathon night or, you know, pre-marathon night. So, you know, if you can do afternoon, have some snacks, you know, I always encourage not having fried food, creamy food, anything that's going to upset your stomach, nothing totally, totally brand new. You know, I've never had oysters. I'm going to try them in Boston. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I just stick with the tried and true. And stuff that you're used to and that sits in your stomach well. So, you know, just make sure that you're having complex carbs, a little bit of protein. You know, that's why the pasta dinners with some meat sauce or meatballs or chicken breast or something like that is popular. That's fine. Then the morning of, you want to make sure that, you know, the nice thing is that you actually have time to digest a decent breakfast. So you could have a bigger breakfast than you're used to on a very early start. Marathon.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, I never even thought of that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because you still have to catch the buses and get bussed out there. I mean, it's still a drama of time.
Right, right. I don't want to start with an empty tank.
Right, absolutely. So you could have a bowl of cereal in your hotel room at 7:30 before you go and meet the bus and then bring with you a bagel and a banana and some, you know, Powerade, Gatorade, water, whatever. And then as you're sitting corralled up, or, you know, sitting in the tents or wherever, you know, while you're waiting to be corralled up, you know, it's usually an hour, 2 hours, whatever, while you're, you know, getting out there. That's when you kind of snack on whatever you brought, whether it's some more cereal or the bagel or banana, you know, again, primarily carbohydrates. So you have an opportunity to eat a little bit more than you probably would have, you know, maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock, which is 4 or 5 hours from race start, which means you need to have a snack. If you're hungry when your toe is on the line, that's not good. That means that your glycogen isn't going to be full. So bring snacks. Definitely bring snacks.
Well, one of the good things about running for a charity is they have the equivalent of racer treat out there. So I'll actually get to sit in a heated place with snacks and things like that while I'm waiting. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. I can't wait to see you. Yay!
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me.
Tara, we love you, and we learn something new every single time you come on. And for those who want to learn more, we encourage you to visit Tara's site. It's www.dietdiva.net. And I would also encourage you to read her blog. It's known as The Diet Diva's Dish. So, Tara, good luck in Boston, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
So for Tara Guidus, for Michelle Scrivener-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying, we'll see you on the road. This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast has been brought to you by All Star Vacation Homes. If you are looking for the highest quality vacation home or condo for your next Walt Disney World vacation, then you need to visit them at www.allstarvacationhomes.com, where hospitality has a new home. And by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, nobody can give you better service and get more for your vacation dollar than the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. So for your next Disney or non-Disney vacation, visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.